All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hi, this is Russ Bailey from Beyond the Strange, and you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast with Al Cooley.
Welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have author Mark Drodos. Mark is the author of Crimshaw Manor. Mark is also involved with the law enforcement. It's always nice to have somebody from the law enforcement that has ghost-related material to share with us. I'll be back with Mark Drodos right after these brief messages. The legend has it, in early 1900, a young lady was raped, murdered, and hung under the Hogback Bridge in Hermitage, Pennsylvania. To this day, if you drive up to the bridge after midnight, leave your keys on the bridge, after 5 minutes, your car will not start. A green light will come up from underneath the bridge. The ghost of the murdered girl is in the back seat of your car. This and many other stories can be found on Ghosts in the Valley podcast, available on iTunes and all other downloaded sites. Today I have author Mark Drodos on the show. He has his first novel just released. It's on the paranormal / horror / mystery type of book. And welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here with you.
Before we get started, I'm constantly asked, how do I find my guests for this show? I mean, from other podcasters and other guests. Usually I scan Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, other podcasts. In your case, I'm friends with Miranda Young. So I was looking, I don't know if it was a Paracon conference you're at, but I seen you were selling your book at this show. And I was really mesmerized by that huge banner you had behind you on your promo of your book. And I'm like, wow, man. I mean, most people just show up on a little table, have like 4 or 5 copies, hoping you sell a couple to get gas going home. You know, but yours impressed me, really. I mean, I like the effort that you put into that, it's, you know, really promoting this book. Went on and I checked the book out. I'm like, oh man, I got to get this, you know? So yeah, I'm really impressed by your own advertising that you do to promote this book.
Happy to hear that. I'm all new to this. Obviously, this being my first book released in July of 22, and it's all learning curve. I'm proud of it. I want people to read it. And talking to some other people, I've gotten tips. I'm happy it caught your attention.
Before we get into your book, The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor, is this a fiction that you made up in your head, or is it really a building?
It's all fictional setting based upon I call it paranormal suspense. Heavily deals with investigating the paranormal from a standpoint of a university club. And this is the first in what I hope to be several more books dealing with the subject and with the same cast of characters.
Okay, so it'll be like maybe a trilogy or something like that.
Correct.
I was reading somewhere where you lived in a haunted house outside the university you were attending. Can you tell us a couple of things about that?
Yes, I will. In fact, I had to go by it after that. It was EnigmaCon at St. Albans. And I went to Radford University in the 80s, 84 to 88. At that time, St. Albans was actually still a functional mental health institution, but they always had rumors about strange things there. But at any rate, it was my junior year, and I moved off campus with a good friend of mine, and I was looking for a place to live. And this realtor said, well, I just bought a house that I can rent to you. The lady who passed away, very, very elderly. The house is old. It was built in 1898. And I said, well, college student, the rent was good for me. I said, yeah, sure. Let's go check it out. He goes, it hasn't even been cleaned out yet. So I was one of the few people to ever see the house in its original state. And we went there, and it was a classic old house, had a big wraparound porch, two stories with a dugout basement. As it turned out, he was going to build a wall right through the hallway and what was the dining room and have a front and the back. Since it was only me and my friend, we moved into the back part of the home and didn't really know the people in the front. They were college students as well. But one night, as I'm sleeping in my room, which was a portion of the hallway, felt something or someone come into my room. And I know everybody can relate to this. If you're sleeping, dozing on a couch in the living room, and somebody comes in, you feel a presence. And I opened my eyes and saw what now I would call a shadow person just walk from one wall to the other wall. And that was the hallway. It was absolutely the hallway at one time. Of course, that freaked me out, jumped, caused a big stir. Friend came over, said, no, you're crazy. Quickly said, okay, maybe it was a dream. It happened once again when I was in there by myself. But the next semester, we had another roommate. So my friend moved in. And when he moved in, I said, don't put your bed over there. That's the hallway. That's where, by this time, I termed the guy's name Monty. I don't know why. That's where he comes through. And sure enough, one night, because by then I got used to it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I would just see it go through, go back to sleep. But he saw it towards the end, right before I was graduating, I was getting my mail out front. Yeah, I met the guys out front. They're out on their porch. And I said something like, hey, sorry about all the noise. I said, we have a ghost, you know, kind of joking. And he got serious and he said, oh my gosh, we do too. There's something in this house. At that time, that was in 87. This is before all the ghost hunting shows. Really, paranormal investigation was not a mainstream type of science or anything. And that really did spark my interest in learning about it and everything else. And then, of course, in the 90s, as the popular ghost hunting and paranormal investigation shows began, it really sparked my interest into learning more about it. The idea of writing a book just came out of I like to read. One day I was just thinking and I said, I think I could do this. And through trial and error, yeah, I was able to. I was very happy.
And, you know, during your university time, you were younger. Prior to that, have you had any paranormal experience?
It's interesting when you look back on one's life, and as you're saying, different segments of your whole lifetime experience, where you're at and what you're doing. I grew up. My dad was a national park ranger, and we grew up in a lot of isolated places in the woods. Yeah, when you're a kid, It's different. Me and my brother would be adventurous and travel throughout the woods, and you just don't know. Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's imagination or something, but to this day, I can go and walk, take a hike through the woods, enjoy it. And there's other times you go to places and you feel it. Something's a little off. Something's a little different. You know, you kind of wonder why that is.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, like I said, in the parks, we kind of had some weird experiences. When we were in South Dakota, there was a real strange experience involving, which my brother and father said was a UFO, but unfortunately, I was asleep at the time. I definitely think when I'm from the DC area, and there's people everywhere all the time, but when you're alone I think that you're more open to noticing things. And that whole idea of being in the woods alone does at times give me the willies.
Now, are you married?
I am. I'm happily married to my wife for over 25 years. Have two sets of twins. That's four children. Wow. And yes, but and of course I have two dogs as well.
Well, the reason I ask that is because how does she feel about the paranormal? Is she into this? You know, because my wife is like, you know, don't bring that shit home with you. You know, that's her. that's why I have a little cross hanging up on my wall back here and in the back. Because of all the stuff I go into, you know, and you can carry the stuff home with you. So I was just curious because my wife wants no part of it. You know, she said, that's cool if you dig that. And, you know, that's not for me.
It's very funny you say that. My wife supports me and is happy for me, but she does not care for that at all. I kind of have to laugh because I have to watch my shows early on a Saturday morning or sometime. Like she said, she goes, you know, Don't bring that stuff here to our house.
Now, I see you worked in the law enforcement. What were your duties?
I'm still working. I'm near retirement. I'm close. And I'm a police detective in one of the large county police agencies in the D.C. area. I've been a police detective for 20 years. I enjoy it. I'm getting towards retirement. Looking forward to that. Basically, as a district detective, I handle everything, investigate everything short of a homicide and some juvenile, you know, heinous juvenile crimes. But everything else in between, I handle. It's just a matter of what's assigned to me.
The reason I ask that, you know, I have some detective friends, you know, part of their investigations on some of these crimes are baffling. I mean, it leaves you scratching your head. I mean, how many have you come across that could have been like, what the heck just happened here? You know, paranormal is the unexplained.
Absolutely. When you are a police officer, you come across all sections of society. And I've been to people's houses, which strange and unusual practices that they may do. There's just everything from some of the Caribbean beliefs to outright just people who worship or I guess do black magic stuff. In the end, I have to deal with facts. And obviously, although I have to say, people in the department know I'm into this stuff. And they'll say, hey, here's something strange. Here's something that you might like to look at. Most likely or not, most of the things I deal with are of the, I want to say, explainable. No X-Files. That would be neat, but no, it's mostly the explainable with just people's beliefs or practices that I'll come across.
I don't know if detectives is different than, like, say a police officer is, like, say, on the beat, being called to a UFO sighting. Because I have a couple friends of mine that was, they're both retired now, but they worked in different counties around my area. Both of them called to the same incident on a UFO sighting where 10 different law enforcement agencies showed up. I mean, from state police, city police, county police, and they're all chasing this thing from, I live in Ohio, so it's going from Ohio to Pennsylvania. After you're looking at this thing, according to them, how many times they've been called crazy or told that putting in the report something different than what they saw. I just wonder if you had any of those type of incidences where you heard or even knew about that.
I know that type of thing happens. Obviously, when somebody's experienced something strange and unusual, their first thought is, you know, contact the police and the first responders will arrive. I personally have not had that experience when I was a patrol officer. Again, in this area, it's just you're busy dealing with everything that a urban area has. But I'm curious again, when I grew up in a rural area, those officers are, yeah, I would think more likely to come across the unexplained object in the air, the strange creature or whatever you want to call it that ran through the yard. I have had or I known of us coming across strange things that if you want to classify it as anything, some ritualistic ceremony, you know, that somebody found off a trail, maybe involving animal sacrifice or something. But for the most part, anything like UFOs, no, not in the DC area. There's too many planes constantly flying by.
Now you say you're in a DC area. Basically, I mean, you live in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
During our interview right now, I'm having a lot of glitches in your, and it's not just you. It's the, it seems like every guest I have that comes out of Virginia, I have some type of problem with the audio or the glitches on the video. And I think it's because, I mean, there's a lot of activity in your state. A lot of stories I get from Virginia, and it seems like all these stories have some type of unusual connection.
Virginia is a great state. I mean, obviously I'm biased. The rich history in Virginia being one of the oldest in the 13 colonies. But when you look at Virginia as a whole, and I've lived all over, you have Northern Virginia, which some people would say is not even Virginia anymore. But you have Northern Virginia, you have the Shenandoah Valley, you have the Tidewater area, and they all have the Richmond, Petersburg area. They all have their own unique personality. I'm sure that's like that in every state. But one of the things that I want to bring to the book, to my stories, is that aspect of Virginia. I said there's the Appalachian Trail in the west. There's the Tidewater Chesapeake area, the Richmond, Petersburg area. They all have their own unique history and culture that I want to bring out in my books. And that's what the students will do is I'm pretty much planning that eventually they'll move around the state to go to various hauntings or things of paranormal things that they're going to investigate. But where I am, and to address your glitch problem, there's a lot of government up here, and of course, and it's just there's certain areas that you can't even get a cell signal in.
Let's get into your book, The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor. Tell my listeners, in a nutshell, what's this book all about?
The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor deals with a paranormal club at a university, Strathmore University. It's a fictional place, fictional town. The university is, I placed it in between, if you're familiar with Virginia, Warrenton and Harrisonburg, west, towards the west. And this paranormal club is always looking to do actual investigations. This is the first investigation that they're able to do. It's a historic manor house that named the Crimshaw Manor because that was the last family that lived there. And the story goes that back in the late 1800s, there was a terrible blizzard. The townsfolk, once everything was melted that they could move around, hadn't heard from anybody from the manor house, went out to see if they were okay, found all the livestock were gone. All the front door was open, and they found Elizabeth Crimshaw hanging from the banister in the foyer. Mr. Crimshaw and their son, Jonathan, were not to be found. That was never solved. And of course, as a lot of local folklore goes, people started believing the place was haunted, seeing shadows, hearing unexplained screams. It became a historical manor house, so it was protected. It had that reputation of being haunted to this day.
Whoever designed your cover did an outstanding job. I mean, it led me to read the back cover, and if I can, I'll just say a little bit on the back cover. What really happened to the Crimshaw family? Are the rumors surrounding the family true? After the great blizzard of 1868, townspeople found Elizabeth Crimshaw's body, like you said, hanging from the banister. Her young son and husband were declared missing and never found. I was like, wow. That led me to put that book in my next books to buy. So, I mean, whoever did this, I mean, whoever put this all together did an outstanding job.
My publisher is BHC Press, and very happy with them, obviously. Again, being new to this world of books and publishing, you have to give up a lot of some control. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, when they did the cover, I was like, well, do I have any input? And they said, well, we're going to design a good cover for you. And I was likewise very happy with it. The colors, the picture. I said, just, it's not an old dilapidated haunted house. It's kept. It's a historic kept place. So don't make, you know, boards across the front, things falling down. So very happy with the publisher and their book cover.
I don't know if you had control over the narrator or not for the audiobook, but I thought that was well done as well. I mean, sometimes authors don't like their narrator or not really happy with the way it was there. You could have had somebody different.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing because I'm also likewise a big Audible book person. I listen to books on Audible. And when the publisher told me, that came out in January. And I was like, I didn't have any input in the narrator. Again, a little nervous, but they, in my opinion, picked an excellent narrator. Couldn't be happier with that product. And it's funny because with books that are on audio, you either like it, it's made me stop listening because of the narration.
Right. I mean, my wife and I, we do a lot of, you know, when we travel, we like to listen to audiobooks on our adventures, you know. And there was a couple we actually had to turn off because the narrator was so with such a whiny little voice, and it didn't sound like the book that she read, you know, my wife read. And it was she said that to her it just ruined the whole book for her, and she didn't get the other rest of the series because of that narrator. But I thought yours was very well done.
Likewise, I'm very happy with it, and I mean, I encourage people after they read the book. I said, go ahead and listen to it. It really will give you another perspective. Very happy.
So, what led you to write this book? You know, and say you was always wanted to write a book. Was it, you know, maybe something in your law enforcement background, or the haunted house in the college years, or what led you to this type of genre?
Obvious answer would be it's something I'm interested in. I remember reading somewhere that if you're going to write about something, you know. I was like, okay. I mean, I think I know a lot about investigation. I think I know a lot about the paranormal. Yeah, I thought, yeah, I could do this. I could do this. I mean, the book, obviously, in my mind, there's things that the group needs to find or figure out to lead them to the next step. And that's just like it is in real investigations. There's information or an event that will happen that will lead you to the next spot, hopefully to solve the mystery. So taking that aspect, that discipline of criminal investigations, which I do, and my interest in the paranormal, I was like, okay, well, that makes kind of sense to combine the two. And, you know, my experiences in college, I still remember those days and the atmosphere of that college life, and as well as my children who have gone through college recently.
You know, with all my guests that's been on the show, I never call them crazy or think they're out there. I know what I was called during the years. My stories took place between years. I was 12 years old and 16. So how many times I was called crazy, I couldn't count. You know, how many times I was grounded by my parents for talking crazy stuff. You know, because they never witnessed it in the house.
You learn quick to keep your experiences to yourself.
And like you said, you know, you're in law enforcement, you know, and how they got to watch what you put out there, you know, because people will say, oh, here comes Crazy Mark, you know. But because I have some people on here don't want to come on, and but they want to share their story, but they don't want to actually say their name because of that fact, you know, or maybe the job they're in. The way it's presented, I mean, what I'm seeing on the cover, what I heard on the audiobook sounds really interesting. I do encourage all the listeners out there to pick your book up. And where can they find your book? Where can they go get it?
I have a website. It's medrotus.com. On there, there's a link that's easily enough to find on the front page. Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, they carry it. BHC Press, you can go to their website, find my book, as well as many others of like genres. It's pretty much everywhere online. Some of the bookstores that in my area I've been able to go to and do book signings at Barnes & Nobles, they're carrying it. And I'm trying to expand my presence. It's hard to do with a full-time job, everything else that needs to be done. But it's out there. It's the easiest way is go online and you'll find it at Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or as I say, wherever scary books are sold.
Can they get an autographed copy of the book?
They can message me. I'll be happy to work that out. If they can't make an event that I'm at, yeah, we can make that happen.
Okay, as soon as I get my copy, I'll leave you a nice comment on the comments on Amazon. I give your publisher a lot of credit for the cover design, the narration, and yourself. You know, going out there and promoting it like you are with the poster, and you're doing well for your first novel. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I'm working on the second one, which continues the story. It's just a matter of finding time to write and be creative at the same time. It's difficult, but you have to make the time to do it if it's something that's your passion.
Thank you, Mark, for being on the show, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I had a good time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark Drotus, for your kind interview, and please check out his new book, The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor. It's available wherever you get your books, at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and if you'd like, send him an email. I'm sure he'll send you an autographed copy of The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor. I'm your host, Al Cooley. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.